is Bloomberg, the first word for this August 30th, 2016. Coming up on the program...
Will the Federal Reserve move in September? We'll have a live interview with Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fisher.
Salaries in the UK are weakening as employers hesitate following June's Brexit vote.
The European Union is poised to fine Apple billions of dollars over its tax arrangement with Ireland.
Could Russia tamper with U.S. elections? Plus, tropical depressions around Florida and North Carolina are forecast to get stronger. I'm Michael Barr. More straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Walk-off win for the Mets. Beat the Marlins on a Yoenis Cespedes home run. Yankees lost in Kansas City. Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal among the winners on opening day at the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg The First Word, on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 991 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1200 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on Bloomberg.com and via the Radio Plus mobile app.
And good morning. I'm John Tucker.
I'm Bob Moon, and it is 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio, and a half hour ahead of that live interview with Stanley Fisher here on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures are down a single point. Dow E-mini futures up a single point, and NASDAQ E-mini futures are down by 7 points. In Europe, London's FTSE higher by a tenth of 1%, the CAC in Paris and the DAX in Frankfurt both up around 1%. 10-year Treasury prices down 7/32, the yield at 1.58%, the 2-year yield at 0.82%. West Texas Intermediate crude is up 1 2/3% to $47.38 a barrel. Brent crude higher by 0.75% to $49.61 a barrel. COMEX gold prices down 1/3% or $4.70 an ounce to $13.22.40. The pound trading at $1.3076 and the yen at 102.36.
And the breaking news on Apple right now, most actively traded in the pre-market in the U.S. Apple shares down 1.5%, now down 1.7%, pretty active here, 3.2 million shares, 105.02 right now, the share price. European regulators have ordered the iPhone maker to repay as much as $14.5 billion in taxes plus interest. Well, this after the European Commission said Ireland granted illegal tax benefits to Apple. It says that enabled the company to pay substantially less tax than other businesses. Now, this ruling covers taxes from 2003 all the way to 2014. Predictions varied widely about how much Apple could be forced to repay. In a worst-case scenario, J.P. Morgan said Apple could have faced a $19 billion bill. Both Ireland and Apple have vowed to fight the decision in court. Shares of Apple, once again, down 1.5% at 105.18.
And John, stocks in Asia finished today's session mostly higher. Bloomberg's David Inglis has details from our Hong Kong bureau.
Bob and John, positive day across Asia on Tuesday, mostly, that is. I mean, moderate gains, especially across some of these underperformers that we saw from Monday. South Korea closing just over 1/3 of 1% higher. Australia higher, but just under 1/5 of 1%. Both those markets, like most of Asia, really, clocking in their first day of gain since mid last week. Japan, on the other hand, of course, closing flat after Monday's 2.3% gain. Worth noting, though, in that market was another highly successful and well-received bond auction in Tokyo. Sale of the 2-year JGBs here, bid to cover 4.5 at a yield of -0.2%. China closing 0.1% up in the equity market. Over 70 Chinese companies released results, which UBS described so far as solid. And the bank sees this set of earnings really as a positive catalyst further when you look at Chinese A shares. So overall, positive session, though volumes like over the past 2 weeks, far from ideal, about 20% lighter across the region compared to this month's average. David Inglis, Bloomberg Radio, Hong Kong.
All right, thanks, David. Equities in Europe this morning also trading higher. And Bloomberg's Anna Edwards joins us live with details from our London bureau. Hi, Anna.
Hey, good to hear you, John and Bob. Now, European stocks are stronger, as you say, this morning. So far, shaking off that weaker-than-estimated euro area confidence figure we got out earlier on today. Eurozone inflation data is due out tomorrow, so watch for that. A weaker euro boosting some exporters, banks also trading higher. VW is one of the exporters on the rise as the company's CEO sets out a time frame for turnaround efforts to bear fruit at the automaker. Matthias Müller says it will take 2 to 3 years for the revamp to pay off. Mining stocks are a drag this morning. Citi has downgraded its six-month view on global metals and mining to bearish, reversing its upgrade of the sector after the Brexit vote. And on the Brexit front, bad anecdotal news on UK wages from search engine Adzuna. It says the average advertised salary for job vacancies dropped by 2.4% year-on-year in the month of July. Meanwhile, UK mortgage approvals slumped to an 18-month low in that same month. John and Bob.
Anna Edwards, live in London, thank you. Mondelez is walking away from takeover discussions with Hershey. The move comes 2 months after its $23 billion bid was rejected. Mondelez says it sees no actionable path forward toward an agreement. Hershey's board unanimously rejected Mondelez's bid of $107 a share in June. According to people familiar with the matter, Mondelez later boosted its offer to $115 a share before abandoning discussions.
And the U.S. dollar strengthening this morning against most of its peers ahead of our interview with Federal Reserve Vice Chair Stanley Fischer this morning in less than 30 minutes. Meanwhile, PIMCO Chief Investment Officer Scott Mather tells Bloomberg he'd like to see policymakers stop providing what he calls forward misguidance.
It has been more like misguidance in terms of describing a reaction function, in terms of describing a development of the economy that would cause them to do certain things, which then they haven't gone forward and done. So probably the best thing they could do to regain that credibility and to get control of market expectations is just to follow through, maybe provide a little bit less of that forward misguidance, but to follow through with that monetary policy reaction function, which means hiking interest rates at a faster pace than once a year, until they get back to something that's closer to normal.
That's PIMCO Chief Executive, Chief Investment Officer Scott Mather. Morgan Stanley also weighing in on the prospects of a rate increase. Banks and a client note the Fed will forego a rate hike next month, recommends buying five-year treasuries.
And let's take a forward look at the markets now. S&P E-mini futures currently down a single point. And Dow E-mini futures up a single point. NASDAQ E-mini futures down by 8 points. Let's check Apple shares again in light of that ruling from Europe. They're down 3% at the moment and among the most actively traded this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg, the first word.
It's 6:07 on Wall Street. Let's get news from around the world this morning, and we say good morning to Michael Barr.
Good morning, John. Forecasters believe a tropical depression will strengthen to a tropical storm later today along North Carolina's Outer Banks. A warning has been posted. The weather system is currently about 115 miles southeast of Cape Hatteras. Meanwhile, a second depression is brewing in the Gulf of Mexico. It's about 240 miles west of Key West, Florida. Todd Kimberlane with the National Hurricane Center says the system will likely curve back to the northeast in the coming days.
We're calling for rainfall totals of 3 to 7 inches over parts of the Florida Peninsula through Thursday, and there could be isolated amounts as high as 10 inches along the west coast of Florida.
In Japan, Typhoon Lion Rock is making landfall. Bloomberg's Andy Sharp has more from Tokyo.
This is the site of the massive earthquake and tsunami that occurred in 2011, as well as the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant that suffered a meltdown in the disaster. The Meteorological Agency is warning of a potential record rainfall in the area. They're also warning residents of potential landslides, powerful gusts, and severe flooding. This is Andy Sharp, Bloomberg News in Tokyo.
Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid is asking the FBI to investigate the threat of Russian tampering with U.S. elections, including the possible falsification of results. A new national poll shows Hillary Clinton leading Donald Trump by 7 points. According to a Monmouth University poll, that's down from a 13-point lead earlier this month. It's a victory for New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Donors in the state who give more than $5,000 to nonprofit groups must publicly disclose it. Schneiderman won dismissal of a lawsuit by the conservative advocacy group Citizens United. They sued to block the rule, arguing that their First Amendment rights were being violated. Brazil's suspended president, Dilma Rousseff, responded to 14 hours of questioning from senators at her impeachment trial yesterday. Bloomberg's Anna Edgerton has more from Brasilia.
She cautioned against removing an elected leader on allegations of accounting irregularities she said were common practice in previous administrations. In spite of her strong performance, allies admit it will be hard to win over enough senators for her to return to office. Anna Edgerton, Bloomberg Radio, Brasilia.
Global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, thank you, Michael. Yeah, coming up on 6:10 of Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. Mets and Marlins, both right now chasing the Cardinals for the last playoff spot of the National League. The series began at Citi Field with a pitcher's duel between Miami ace Jose Fernandez and Mets youngster Rafael Montero. Scoreless in the eighth inning, it was 1-1 in the tenth.
The pitch.
Swing, high drive, left field, and it's going to go. And the Mets are going to win. Home run! Up comes the Apple. Out come the Mets out of the dugout. Jose Reyes is the first one standing there. He's dancing. He's waiting for his buddy. Here comes Cespedes.
On WOR, his 27th homer of the year. Mets won 2-1 as six pitchers combined to allow only five Miami hits. St. Louis won, so the Mets still throw the cards by 2.5 games. Yankees are 3.5 out as they chase a wild card, but there are five teams ahead of the Yanks, like Detroit and Houston, who both won last night, and Kansas City, who beat the Yanks 8-5. Royals scored three runs in the first inning, then put it away with a five-run seventh that included an Alcides Escobar three-run homer. D.D. Gregorius had three hits, two RBIs for the Bombers. Michael Pineda fell to 6-11. Opening day at the U.S. Open, first-ever men's match at the brand-new Grandstand Court produced a battle of Americans. John Isner came from two sets down to defeat 18-year-old Francis Tiafoe in a fifth-set tiebreaker after Tiafoe had served for the match. Another match, two Americans, also involving an 18-year-old, but Taylor Fritz fell in five sets to Jack Sock. American Brian Baker blew a two-set lead, lost in five. The Broncos announced the winner of their quarterback derby, little-known Trevor Siemian, the third stringer last year, will now QB defending Super Bowl champs. He beat out Mark Sanchez. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. John?
All right, thanks to John. The Atlanta Falcons have closed financing on their new $1.5 billion stadium a year earlier than executives projected. Well, funding for the stadium, which opens next year, includes $200 million in public money and $200 million from the National Football League. The other $1.1 billion will come from newly financed debt, seats, license sales, and equity contributed by Falcons owner Arthur Blank and his partners. This is Bloomberg. And join us later this morning less than 20 minutes for an interview with the Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer. It's live. He'll be sitting down with Tom Keene to discuss the health of the U.S. economy and the future of interest rates.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And good morning to you once again from Bloomberg World Headquarters. I'm Bob Moon with this Bloomberg Radio Business Flash. And to recap, Apple was ordered to repay a record 13 billion euros, that would be around $14.5 billion, plus interest, after the European Commission said Ireland illegally slashed the iPhone maker's tax bill. Apple and the Irish government have both vowed to fight the decision, but it is moving Apple stock this morning in pre-market trading. Apple shares down 2.3% right now and the most actively traded stock of the morning. Our Bloomberg Dublin Bureau Chief Dara Doyle will have more on this story with John Tucker in just a moment. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P E-mini futures currently down 2 points. That is 0.1%. Dow E-minis lower by 10 points. NASDAQ E-mini futures now sinking down to 12 points lower. London's FTSE is higher by 0.1%. The CAC in Paris and the DAX in Frankfurt both up around 0.75%. 10-year Treasury prices down 8/32. The yield at 1.58%. West Texas Intermediate crude up 0.2% to $47.28 a barrel. COMEX gold prices lower by 0.3% or $5 to $13.2210 an ounce. The pound at $1.3078. The yen at 102.36. That's your Bloomberg Business Flash. And now let's check world and national news with Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Bob. A tropical weather system off the coast of North Carolina's Outer Banks is forecast to strengthen in the next day, bringing winds up to 45 miles an hour. Right now, the Tropical Depression has winds of 35 miles per hour and is about 115 miles southeast of Cape Hatteras. It is forecast to become a tropical storm this afternoon. Another tropical depression in the Gulf of Mexico could hit northern Florida as a tropical storm later in the week. The FBI is warning state officials to boost their election security. The FBI has said that there's evidence that hackers have targeted related data systems in two states. In sports, in Major League Baseball, the Yankees lost to the Royals. The Mets beat the Marlins. The Red Sox and the Nationals won. The A's and the Orioles lost. In tennis, since day one of the U.S. Open began in New York. Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic advanced. And finally, from Daybreak on our Bloomberg terminal, a triathlon is tough enough, but one participant during an event in Dublin, Ireland, had to deal with wildlife. John, a cyclist, was taken down by a deer who leaped out when the deer tried to jump over him. It didn't work out for either one.
Do you make this stuff up?
I wish I could. This is true. According to the BBC, the crash was spectacular. The competitor, Shane O'Reilly, recovered to get back in the race. His helmet was cracked. He had minor injuries, but O'Reilly completed the race.
What about the deer?
Oh, it scampered off in the woods. Okay. It really meant Bambi. It was, anyway.
All right, Michael.
Thank you. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
All right, that'll be enough of you. 6:20 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker. And doing something a little different. Take a closer look at Apple this morning. Dropping in early U.S. trading after the European Union ordered it to repay as much as 13 billion euros. That works out to $14.5 billion plus interest in illegal state aid it received from Ireland. And let's head over to Dublin right now. Our bureau chief there is Dara Doyle. There are a couple of things I'm learning about Ireland this morning. That Ireland has deer. I didn't know that.
And yeah, they indeed.
They like to give big tax breaks to company. Oh,
how
well, awful.
Allegedly. Let's take a step back here. We had a commission finding indeed this morning that says Ireland did give a sweetheart deal to Apple, but Ireland vehemently disputes that and will take this all the way to the appeal court. So let's maybe step back a little bit. Allegedly, I would say.
Well, either they did or they didn't. I mean, that can't be that difficult to prove or disprove.
Well, that's interesting. When you're talking international tax law, I'm not an international tax expert, but Ireland believes that it has a defendable case. They believe that the Commission is taking a political course here and trying to make a wider point to the international investment community that does have sovereignty over tax policy. So, Ireland would argue that there's a bigger game at play here and that Ireland is a pawn and Apple are a pawn within this bigger game, a war between the EU and the US to an extent. So, I mean, yeah, you could argue that, but there is another case that Ireland is putting forward, and that would play out in the courts in the next sort of 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so we get uncertainty about this for, I don't know, how long is this going to take?
As I said, it will be appealed all the way, and we're looking at, as I said, 3 to 5 years before we have a final decision.
Okay. Now, as far as the figure, we came up with $14.5 billion. They also say plus interest. What's that plus interest add up to?
So under European tax law, I'm not sure about the U.S., if you don't pay your taxes on time, then you are liable to pay an interest and a fine on the notional amount that you're due to pay. So, I mean, I don't have a figure at the moment in terms of where that $13 billion could go up to. But, I mean, let's not cavil here. This is a massive amount of money already. To give you a bit of context, it's about twice as much as Ireland collected in corporate tax in 2015. It's about 30% of our total tax take in a given year. Even for Apple, this is a serious amount of money. I mean, Apple is sitting on a cash pile of over 200 billion euros, and which is a lot of money, but, 13, 14 billion, it's not a drop in the ocean, even for a company like Apple.
Okay. Does Ireland get along with the European Union, or do they hate them as much as the Brits did?
It's a very good question. Top line, I would say absolutely not in terms of do we have an adverse relationship in the way the UK does. No, Ireland would be very much a supporter of the EU, and that's partly because it's how we differentiate ourselves from the UK to show that we're a strong supporter of the EU. There has been dips in the relationship during the bailout. For example, people thought Europe was being quite unfair to us in some respects. Some people will see this case today as another step in that. But remember, a lot of people in Ireland would think this is a good thing because they're basically, who's Apple paying this money to? Apple is due to pay this money to Ireland. So notionally, Ireland stands to gain this massive windfall from Apple. Now, that's not how it's actually going to play out because Ireland said it doesn't want the cash. It wants Apple to keep the money. But, a lot of people will see this as, the EU getting involved and making, this big corporate player pay its fair share of tax. So you can play this either way.
Okay, Dara, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Dara Doyle from our Dublin Bureau, the Dublin Bureau Chief there. at Bloomberg, the first word this morning being brought to you by CIT. From transportation to healthcare to manufacturing, CIT offers commercial lending, leasing, and treasury management services for small and middle market businesses. Learn more at CIT.com. Put knowledge to work. Again, active in the pre-market, most active, Apple shares down 2.2%, trading right now at 104.50. This is Bloomberg. And still ahead, just a few minutes, in Washington Live, Tom Keene sits down with Stanley Fischer, the Fed Vice Chairman, on the future of U.S. interest rates. You don't want to miss this.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg the First Word.
6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon, and straight over to our live interview now with Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer. Here's our Tom Keene in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Right now, we welcome Bloomberg Radio worldwide and all of you on Bloomberg Television. I'm now joined by the Vice Chairman of the Federal Reserve System, Stanley Fischer. Professor Fischer, wonderful to speak to you.
Good to see you, Tom.
Again, I want to get out of the way the September-December dance. I'm not going to ask you what you're going to do here in a few weeks because you're not going to give me an answer. What I want to know is not the if, but when there is a rate increase, can you and Chair Yellen frame a one-off event, or are you forced into a measured, a higher vector of rate increases? Can you do one and done or even two and done? Or do you have to go to a measured set of rate increases like what we saw a decade ago?
Well, the work of the central bank is never done, and I don't think you can say one and done, and that's it. We can choose the pace, but we choose the pace on the basis of data that are coming in. So I don't think we know at the time we start whether it's one and done or several. It depends entirely on what's happening in the economy.
At your Aspen speech, you stated, "I am an optimist. You are surrounded by pessimists. We speak to them every day on Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio." I want you to redefine Marvin Goodfriend's comment in Jackson Hole of pervasive pessimism. It's out there. Pervasive pessimism exists today. How do you push back against that?
Well, the question is, what is the pessimism about? It's not about employment. Employment is very close to full employment. It's about growth, and that problem is largely about productivity growth, something which is very hard to control by policymakers. It depends enormously on what private individuals are doing in their companies. And it's very slow at the moment. It changes from time to time, but we do not know when it will change. I expect it will change somewhere down the road. There are remarkable things going on the technological front, but they are not yet in the data.
You mentioned also the unmitigated blessings of the United States. America's different, and certainly you and Chair Yellen are running a central bank distinct from the challenges that other central banks have. Do you feel going into the September meeting, or for that matter the December meeting, that you are the central bankers to the world, or can you be discreet and look only at the United States economics?
Well, the world has become increasingly interconnected, particularly the capital markets of the world. So what we do affects many other countries. That was always so. It's also true that what they do affects us. So we're dealing with interconnectedness, and we are probably the most important of the central banks, but the European Central Bank is operating in an area of about the same level of GDP. And what it does matters a great deal, and so on.
Different economists, Paul Krugman at Princeton and your colleague Olivier Blanchard at MIT, have a primal scream to go back to simpler economic models, to move from the modern mumbo-jumbo back to simpler models, more hooked into the real economy. The debate at Jackson Hole and the debate you're having at the Fed, does it need to go back to simpler models that you taught years ago at MIT?
Well, we'd all love simplicity. The question is, I think, DSGE models, as they're called, those which are fundamentally forward-looking, and the future matters and expectations matter, or those which are more traditional but maybe very big. The basic model that the Fed uses, the so-called FURBUS, F-R-B U.S. model,
right,
is actually large and quite complicated, but its structure is one that one could explain to economics students.
Well, I would like you to explain it now to bankers, because what I would suggest respectfully, sir, is I saw a lot of economists talking to each other at Jackson Hole. There's a whole other system out there. When we look at negative rates, when we look at tepid subpar economic growth and the productivity that you mentioned, I don't see the economists addressing the dysfunction to the financial system. Within the debate that you're having for September and December, are you sensitive and aware to global finance and global banking having to deal with negative interest rates, just as one example?
Well, we're sensitive to what's going on. One hears about it, one hears and reads about and talks about what's
happening. You just have to look at their stock prices in Europe, sir.
What's happening in Japan, for instance. Yes, we take all that into account. The United States is fortunate that we're not in a position where interest rates are negative or have to be negative, and we're not planning to do anything in that direction. But we certainly follow the debates, and we certainly follow the theory of negative interest rates.
Within negative rates, I spoke to you at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York pretty much when it was starting. And then we had a conversation with you a number of months ago, maybe it was half a year ago, I can't remember now. And here we are today. What have you learned about negative rates in the crucible of the markets? What have you learned in the last number of months?
Well, we've learned that the central banks which are implementing them, there are four or five of them, basically think they're quite successful and are staying with that approach. Possibly with the exception of Japan, although they're thinking it through and they have said they'll come back to try and make negative rates work better. So we're in a world where they seem to work. I think one of the most interesting developments I've seen in theory is a paper that says, yes, they work up to a certain point, and then they become counterproductive.
Precisely. Yeah, that's a critical point. I mean, we have, within the interviews of Bloomberg Surveillance at Francine Lacroix, I have had Olivier Blanchard calls them an outright scam. Now, granted, he's not a public official anymore. I understand that. There is a raging debate about the efficacy of negative interest rates for central banks, for governments, and again for banking itself. What about the efficacy of negative rates for savers and the people of these different nations?
Well, clearly there are different responses to negative rates. If you're a saver, they're very difficult to deal with and to accept, mm-hmm. although typically they go along with quite decent equity prices. But we consider all that, and we have to make trade-offs in economics all the time. And the idea is the lower the interest rate, the better it is for investors. And that's where one of the great disappointments of the reaction to very low interest rates is to be found.
I know that if I speak currency, everybody at the Federal Reserve stands up and says, you can't speak that, so I'll tread carefully here. Within the currency dynamics, and again, the belief of going back to simpler models in something like Mundell Fleming, we're living currency adjustments right now that I would suggest President Trichet would call brutal moves, just looking at strong yen. Tell me about dollar dynamics within greater macroeconomics now. We've had a great move in the dollar. You've mentioned this within your Aspen speech. Can we withstand any more strong dollar moves?
We're growing at around 2%. And the problem we face is that of productivity. I don't think that the dollar is fundamentally the most important factor affecting the rate of growth of productivity. Obviously, a stronger dollar has an impact on the profitability of American companies and on how much we want to import. But the bottom line on this is we have seen an appreciation of the dollar, and the American economy continues at full employment, or is moved towards full employment. And so in a fundamental sense, we've withstood much of that challenge. It has had an impact on inflation, reducing inflation. But we have to deal with the world as it is.
Two final thoughts. Mr. Sims, Professor Sims of Princeton, was quite adamant about a greater fiscal thrust. We're exhausted from 9 years of monetarists alone, central bankers alone. How do you link the need for fiscal policy into the actions you take in September and December? The fiscal policy debate, to me, is 2017 or even 2018. It's really not part of the calculus now, is it?
Well, it's very difficult to take into account something with that much uncertainty. I'm sure there'll be changes in fiscal policy in 2017 or 18, as you suggest, but we don't know what they will be. We don't know who will implement them. So we get on with the world that we see and with the data that come in and with the data that we expect to come in.
I've tried to look forward here. I need to look back. What was the symbolism? At Jackson Hole, the worthies walk out of the lodge and gaze at the elk in the mountains. Usually it would be Chair Yellen with some foreign dignitary. This time around, she's surrounded by Dudley and Fisher. What was the symbolism of New York, the vice chairman, propping up the chair?
I don't think we're propping up the chair. It's a pleasure to work with a chair. But propping up is not something.
Yeah, Michael Barr, this is Bloomberg. John.
All right, thank you, Michael. Well, we are now just about 2.5 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Breaking news this morning concerning Apple. European regulators have ordered the iPhone maker to repay as much as $14.5 billion in taxes plus interest. This after the European Commission said Ireland granted illegal tax benefits to the company.
And you heard that interview with Stanley Fischer. Well, PIMCO Chief Investment Officer Scott Mather tells Bloomberg he would like to see Fed policymakers stop providing what he calls forward misguidance.
It has been more like misguidance in terms of describing a reaction function, in terms of describing a development of the economy that would cause them to do certain things, which then they haven't gone forward and done. So probably the best thing they could do to regain that credibility and to get control of market expectations is just to follow through, maybe provide a little bit less of that forward misguidance, but to follow through with that monetary policy reaction function, which means hiking interest rates at a faster pace than once a year, until they get back to something that's closer to normal.
That's PIMCO Chief Investment Officer Scott Mather.
Mondelez International walking away from takeover discussions with Hershey. That story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellet.
The move came 2 months after its $23 billion bid was rejected by the chocolate maker. According to a statement, Mondelez said it saw, quote, no actionable path forward toward an agreement. The merger would have transformed Mondelez into the world's largest candy company and given it a bigger share of the domestic market, a weak spot for the snack giant. Hershey generated almost 90% of its revenue in North America last year, with the majority of that coming from selling chocolate in the U.S. Mondelez, meanwhile, has suffered from currency fluctuations and slowing overseas economies. Charlie Pellet, Bloomberg Radio.
Thank you, Charlie. The Volatility Index Report is brought to you by CBOE, VIX Options and Futures. Volatility can be harnessed with CBOE, VIX Options and Futures. See disclosures and learn more at cboe.com/powerfuloutcomesvix. Well, the VIX fell 5.2% yesterday to close at 1294. Separately, in today's extended morning trading, VIX futures are lower by 0.1%. to 1293. That is this morning's Volatility Report. John?
It's 6:49 on Wall Street. Time now to check on what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories on our nation's capital include FBI Director James Comey delivering keynote remarks at a Symantec symposium this morning, focusing on the evolving cyber landscape. We also have state primaries today with congressional contests in Arizona and Florida, where Senators John McCain and Marco Rubio face Republican challengers. And presidential candidates already preparing for next month's debate, the first in the campaign. Here to tell us more about it is Bloomberg's Elizabeth Titus. Elizabeth, you know, watch pay-per-view, the WWF SmackDown. You can get a lot of money for that. Why not just do pay-per-view for the presidential debates? They can make a fortune.
Great question. You know, Hillary Clinton has said she's aware that this is going to be a huge opportunity to make a first impression with tens of millions of voters. She was overheard at a fundraiser in East Hampton yesterday saying that she's expecting 100 million people to tune in, with as many as 60 million really paying attention to this race for the first time.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to see what the ratings are going to be for this afterwards. It's attracting a lot of attention because I guess people just expect lots of fireworks.
Well, you have two candidates who really couldn't be more different stylistically or in how they're preparing for this first debate. Based on what we're hearing from them and based on what they're telling different media outlets covering the debate prep, it's really night and day, with Clinton taking a very detailed, prepared approach, full of research, lots of briefing books. And Trump saying, you know, I got this far on my personality, on my instincts, on my gut reaction to how to play this game. And he's projecting confidence that that's going to serve him well in the debate, too. So it will be very interesting to see how that all plays out in real time.
Yeah, I would guess that a lot has to do with the moderator and how the moderator is going to keep control of the debate. Do we know any of those particulars?
No, it's yet to be determined publicly who's moderating. And this is actually a point that Trump has made when he was sort of giving people the impression he might be wavering on his commitment to showing up to these debates. He has said he will debate, but that he wants the terms to be agreeable to him, and that includes, you know, format and moderator. So, you know, so far his campaign has done nothing like put its foot down and said, you know, so-and-so is unacceptable to us. But we've yet to reach that point where the Presidential Debate Commission has announced who it's chosen, and that's something to watch out for.
How many debates? Do we know? Is it just going to be one or what?
The Commission on Presidential Debates has scheduled three debates between Clinton and Trump, and then one debate between their running mates, Mike Pence and Tim Kaine. And so September 26th, less than a month from now, is when it all kicks off with the first Clinton-Trump debate, and then it takes us through October.
But it's unlikely we're going to get three presidential debates, right? I mean, Trump has been saying that maybe just one?
Well, so far we don't have any concrete reason to believe that Trump is going to back out. He has yet to go that far. It's been an election cycle where you never want to say never because it's been so unusual. But for now, we are all planning on three, covering three.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. We appreciate it. Bloomberg's Elizabeth Titus. You can read more on this story, Bloomberg.com, or on the Bloomberg Terminal. And a reminder, you can follow all the latest Bloomberg Radio in Washington. That's Bloomberg 99.1 at 105.7 FM HD2.
Thank you, John. Now your Bloomberg Green Business Report. Build a better lobster trap, and the world will beat a path to your door. And it seems the same applies to lobster bait. Lobster and crab fishermen have long baited traps with dead herring, but the little fish are in short supply, threatening livelihoods in a lucrative industry. Now, with about $1 million in funding from the National Science Foundation, a small company has developed OrganoBait. It's about the size and shape of a hockey puck, a calcium-based tablet made with synthetic materials that replicate the smell of decaying fish to attract lobsters and crabs. Commercial fishermen have long experimented with alternative baits. They've tried other fish, processed slabs of horseshoe crab, even cowhide and pig's feet. Some products remain on the market. Many have gone quickly. Environmentalists say fish used for bait need protection, and experts say the herring shortage, if prolonged, could raise the price and reduce the availability of lobsters and crabs. That is your Bloomberg Green Business Report.
And Bloomberg, the first word being brought to you by ETF Exchange 16, BNY Mellon's annual ETF Symposium, September 19th to the 21st in Dana Point, California. This essential conference, complimentary for RIAs, but space is limited. Register now at bnymellon.com/ETF. Time now for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. There's no shortage of incubators and accelerators to help fledgling ventures get off the ground, but there's not much of a support system for mature small companies with proven business models. Helping increase sales at these kinds of enterprises actually does more for economic development. These so-called high-impact companies are believed to create nearly all net new jobs. Even though they make up a minority of companies in the U.S., that's according to a 2011 study for the U.S. Small Business Administration's Office of Advocacy. Supporting the growth stage makes sense because it's harder than the startup phase, according to Linda Rottenberg, co-founder and chief executive officer of Endeavor. The New York nonprofit runs a selective mentoring network for about 1,300 entrepreneurs from 25 countries. Rottenberg says Endeavor's more than 800 companies have created about 500,000-plus jobs since they joined the network. And that's today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. And it's 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following is from Bloomberg View. Opinions and commentary from Bloomberg columnists.
I'm Christopher Flavelle, an editor at Bloomberg View. Last fall, two towns at opposite ends of the country entered a new kind of contest run by the federal government. At stake was their survival. Each is being consumed by the rising ocean, and winning money from Washington would have meant the chance to move to higher ground. On the western edge of Alaska, the remote town of Neutauk was losing 75 feet of coastline each year to sea level rise and melting permafrost. It was about to lose its drinking water, its school, and maybe its airport. Its residents had been trying to move to safety for 20 years. They had even obtained new land. 4,000 miles away, on the coast of Louisiana, another town, Île-de-Jean-Charles, was also starting to drown. But it was home to just 25 families. It wasn't losing land at the same rate as Neutauk. Its residents didn't face the same risk of losing access to key facilities, and they hadn't selected a new site. In January, the government announced its decision. Île-de-Jean-Charles in Louisiana would get full funding for a move. Neutauk in Alaska would get nothing. The contest demonstrated this much. The federal government is still struggling to figure out which communities need to be moved because of climate change, and how to choose, and how to pay for it. What's the right way to make those decisions? Officials told me the rigid rules prevented them from using their own best judgment, such as calling to see which town was more ready to move. So one option is to give bureaucrats more leeway. Another is just let Congress decide. Leave it up to pure politics. No outcome will make everyone happy, but we have to start thinking about this now. There will be more towns like Neutauk that need help. I'm Christopher Flavelle. For more opinion, please visit ViewGo on the terminal or Bloomberg.com/view.
This has been Bloomberg View.
And let's recap for you our interview with Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer today, speaking to Bloomberg's Tom Keene. He said employment is very close to full employment, but productivity growth is very slow at the moment. He said we can choose the pace of rate increases based on the data, but it would not be necessarily one and done. S&P E-mini futures are unchanged at this hour. 10-year Treasury prices down 5/32, the yield 1.57%. This is Bloomberg.